After years on the road, Timmy parked the van and picked up the mic to bring you this podcast that features interviews with people from hardcore to hair metal. This is Talk To Me with your host, Joshua Toomey.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Talk To Me. This is episode 99, and on this episode, I speak to Wednesday 13. His new album, Condolences, comes out June 2nd, and you can pre-order now over at nuclearblast.com.
Connect with Talk To Me on Facebook at facebook.com/talktometalk.
I'm not collecting friends, and I'm not building any farms. I don't want to get sucked into this.
And Twitter at Talk To Me Talk.
All right, let's start off this week with a wonderful five-star iTunes review, and it comes from the beautiful country of Australia, and it comes from Nodes Neb. It's called Talk To Me, It's Like You Knew Me. Killer guests and always a great listen. Toomey doesn't just interview current artists. He will dig deep and dust off people you haven't thought of in years. Toss in some tunes, shout-outs, and you have yourself a well-oiled podcast. Guaranteed to moisten your ear pussy. Yes, ear pussy. From Wendy Dio to John 5, Fallon Bowman to Phil Anselmo, Talk To Me isn't about pulling ratings and only interviewing the biggest guests. He likes to toss that metal salad. Give us a nice wide variety of past and present peeps, and that's what makes it one of my favorite podcasts. So thank you, Ben Nodes, down there in Australia. You've been a supporter for a very, very long time. You came in on a very early episode, and I know, and thank you so much for leaving a nice five-star rating and a nice five-star review. And now it's on to our shout-outs for sharing, and that's shout-outs for sharing on Facebook and Twitter. If you see this podcast pop up in your Facebook timeline, your Twitter feed, make sure to hit that share button, hit that retweet button, and you will get a shout-out on an upcoming episode. And so for sharing episode 98 with Rob Rivera of Nonpoint, the shout-outs are like this: Mike Jolitz, Shane Hebert, Joel Baggett, Rob Rays, Sean Reinert, Nicole Palmer, Ear Peeler. Thanks, Vic, over there at Ear Peeler. Got to thank Nonpoint for sharing. Got to give a huge shout out to Rob Rivera for not only sharing the podcast, but also giving a nice shout out on a Facebook Live video that he did. And to our friends Steak and Titties and AC over there on Twitter, thank you guys for all for sharing the podcast. Make sure to share this episode 99 with Wednesday 13. It's a lot of fun, and you will get a shout out on episode 100. Yes, episode 100 is coming up soon, and I cannot believe it's coming. Let's go ahead and get into our cover of the week, brought to you by puckhockey.com. That's puckhcky.com. Make sure to head over there, shop till you drop. Use the promo code TALK at checkout for 10% off your entire order. Yes, that is TALK at checkout for 10% off your entire order of Snoop Dogg Testament. I just saw that they posted some Testament stuff. I'm going to have to put in another order already. So you've got Snoop Dogg, Testament, Head PE, Doyle, Tom Hazard, Dave Ellefson, 36 Crazy Fists, so many great bands over there, and so many great t-shirts over there. So make sure, go over there, shop till you drop, use the promo code TALK, as in Talk To Me, at checkout for 10% off your entire order. And so for the Talk To Me cover of the week this week, it's very easy. It's the Murder Dolls doing White Wedding.
Hey, this is John 5, and you're listening to Talk To Me.
Get down to sound my radio, 20 mortal ashes of grotesque audio. We'll be right back.
Joe, this is Trevor from Obituary, and you're listening to Talk to Me.
All right, before we get into our talk with Wednesday 13, make sure you're heading over to talktomepod.com. It had a nice facelift over there at talktomepod.com. Check it out and let me know what you guys think of the new facelift. Let me know what you think. I've been adding a lot of stuff over there and trying to just create. The downloads lately have been so insane. The numbers are through the roof. And everything's going up and up and up. And so I want to say thank you to each and every one of you out there that listens on a weekly basis, that shares the podcast and lets everybody know that we're doing some fun stuff over here on the Talk To Me podcast. Also, if you want to support the podcast monetarily, it's all over there at talktomepod.com. There's a nice donate button. You can contact me through there. You can read reviews. There's some album reviews up there. My good friend John Aaron over there at the John's Untitled podcast did a review of the latest He Is Legend album. It's just going to be a lot of fun getting the site built and getting it out to you. So head over to talktomepod.com and let me know what you guys think of the new facelift. So let's get into our talk with Wednesday 13. Like I said earlier, his new album is called Condolences. What a great album title. I need to find out. I'm sure there's a band called Condolences, but that would be a perfect band name too. But the new album Condolences out June 2nd. Let's check out what The Night Brings off of the new album, and then let's talk to Wednesday 13.
This is Dave Lombardo, and you're listening to Talk to Me.
Yeah!
All right, guys, that was What the Night Brings by Wednesday 13, and we are joined by Wednesday 13. How are you today, sir?
I am great.
Man, I have to say that this new stuff I've been hearing, man, it's like it's some of the heaviest stuff you've done. What's the change in direction?
It's just been kind of going that way for the past couple of records. I think we really started on the Dixie Dead record. We kind of started doing a little more metal with some of the songs. We had that Hell Ming song and the Curse the Living song. And then on the Monsters of the Universe record, it definitely went into some heavier stuff as well. And then, and it's been, you know, 2 years since that record came out, a little over 2 years. So it's just been 2.5 years of us touring nonstop, playing that record. And we just kind of wanted it to go heavier and darker. And that's what turned out with Condolences. And I couldn't be happier with it. It's like a new and improved version of Wednesday 13.
Yeah, I've been into what you've been doing for a very long time, but it's always been kind of like an 80s rock band, heavy rock band. And when I first turned on this stuff, I was like, wow, like he's definitely gone like super heavy. It's amazing.
Yeah, it turned out cool, but it's a natural thing. It wasn't like we just, oh, we're going to write this heavy record. It's just, that's just how the music came out. And that's kind of where our heads are, where we are musically. And for me, over the past, I guess 7-8 years now, I've really become like a metalhead. Like that's just what I listen to. It's what I like, and I've started incorporating a lot of that into our music. And I've always kind of teetered on the punk/metal thing as well, you know, over the years. But this time, it's just full blown this time.
What kind of metal have you been listening to lately?
Oh man, just everything from Carcass to Testament. As far as like heavy, if you like black metal or anything, I really don't listen to black metal. The only black metal band I really kind of listen to is Satyricon. Nice. I don't know, is Behemoth considered black metal? Maybe they are. I listen to them too. So, but yeah, just you know, everything from like Lamb of God to Fear Factory to there's just tons of stuff, you know. And then I'm just the same way. I'm listening to that, then I'm also putting on Hall & Oates right after sometimes. So it's weird. I've got this weird fascination now with like old 80s bands like Huey Lewis and Hall & Oates. And
it's funny you bring up Hall & Oates, because I remember being a kid hearing Maneater, and that song when I was like 4, 5, 6 truly terrified me. Because I took it as literal. I thought it was a literal man eater.
Yeah, exactly.
So this new album's coming out on Nuclear Blast. How did you get involved with Nuclear Blast?
It's really cool. Like, you know, we put the What the Night Brings video out last month, and I read all the comments on YouTube, and it's funny because people are talking about how the band's heavy, and oh, it's obvious because they're on Nuclear Blast now. And the funny thing is, we recorded this record and had it done before we ever had a deal or anything talking with Nuclear Blast. We just recorded the record with Zeus, and we put a lot of time and a lot of money and effort and work in making this record sound great, in hopes we would get a deal. So when we got the record done, when it came time to shop it for a label, the first label that came to mind for me was Nuclear Blast. And I kind of had an in there because the A&R guy, Monty Connor, who is my A&R guy now, he's the president of the company, and he worked with Murdered Dolls with Roadrunner Records. And so I've known him for years, and we've been friends. So when I hit him up and I was like, hey, dude, we just did a record with Zeus, and I know he likes Zeus producing and stuff. I was like, you want to check it out and let me know what you think? And if you like it, maybe put us on Nuclear Blast, you know.
Nice.
And he wrote back, and he said he would check it out. And then we were actually coming through town in New York City, and Monty lives nearby, and he came and saw us at Webster Hall and saw the band. He hadn't seen the band probably since the Transylvania record, which is 12 years ago.
Oh wow.
Yeah, so he hadn't seen the band in a long time. He saw Murder Dolls, but he didn't really, actually, I don't really know if he saw Murder Dolls, believe it or not. I don't know. But yeah, so he hadn't seen the band in a while, so he saw us at Webster Hall, and he was like, wow, you guys are a powerhouse. So we just kept talking, and we worked a deal out. So I couldn't be happier. It's the first place I wanted to go to, and it worked out, you know. So it's really cool because there's such a cool team there, and I've been meeting everyone over the past couple months, and it's been great. It's this team like all around the world pushing this record from Europe. I'm doing interviews every day, and it's just it's really really cool right now. Things couldn't be better for us.
Yeah, if there's one person that shaped my teenage years, I think Monty Connor comes to mind because, you know, he signed every single amazing band on Roadrunner.
He's done everything. When you think of like all the bands he's put out, you got Life of Agony, you got a Type O Negative, you got Slipknot, Fear Factory, Machine Head. It's just like it just doesn't stop. You know, it's like and he's so cool about music and stuff. He's so into it. Like when we were doing the artwork for the record, like he read through everything. Goes, hey, do you want to separate that word between that word? Because it really would make sense if you have that word there. You need a comma right there. And I'm like, fuck, you read everything. So yeah, man, he's really detailed about it. And he was like that too on my other records as well. I kind of forgot about it. It's been so long, but I've just been working hands on with him, and it's just been a really, really cool experience. And it's really cool that he signed the band, you know, based off what he liked it and he thought the record was good. Whereas in the past, like when I got my deal with Roadrunner with Murder Dolls, it just felt like I was signed to them and to Roadrunner. And when I went to them, my first record, Monty wanted to sign us, but he couldn't get anyone else to agree with him to sign it. So, Roadrunner, they didn't want to put it out. They told me no. And then another label hit me up and said, hey, we'll sign you. So Roadrunner had first write a refusal. And, when they found out somebody else wanted me, they went, oh, well, we'll put your record out now.
Crazy.
I was like, okay. So this one felt a little more deserved, I guess. It wasn't just, oh, I got a deal because somebody else wanted it. You know what I mean? Like this was like we worked hard on it and we made a cool record, and Monty being a guy that, you know, signing all these great bands we just talked about, you know, and being on that page, he's, you know, it's just, it feels good. It feels like it was deserved this time, as opposed to just, oh, here you go. Here's a deal.
Yeah. From what I can tell, man, everything that I've seen so far of the new album, like I'm actually looking very much forward to it, you know, to where, you know, past albums I checked out and I was into it, but I didn't anticipate it as much as maybe this new album, if that makes any sense. So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Man. We got a lot of promo and everything on it as well. Like every day I wake up and turn on my computer, there's like a new video up of something that we did or, you know, just promoting the record. And, we have our new, new video Bloodsick, comes out this week as well. And, so yeah, it's, things are good. And, just lots of promotion. It's like, it's the busiest I've ever been. I felt like with anything I've ever done. And, maybe it's because I don't have a manager and I do it all myself now. So maybe I feel it's so busy. And I actually have a schedule. I have to wake up early in the morning and get off my rock and roll hours. And, but it's good, man. It feels really good to having all this promotion behind us. And, we're doing videos. Like, by the time the record comes out, we'll have 4 full length, videos out.
It's so crazy how the times have changed with music, you know, where it's like Metallica's Black Album had 5 videos, but it was over, you know, 3 years time to where now, you know, by the time your album comes out, you're going to have 4 quote unquote singles. It's crazy.
Yeah. There's really like no rules to what you can do anymore. Like that wasn't anything that I set up. That was something that the label wanted to do. And that was one of the things when we did the deal with Monty, I was like, it was one thing that was really important to me. I was like, man, we have to have a video budget to do videos. I haven't done videos in years. This band's visual, it needs it. We got to have something to represent that. People come to our show all the time and see us, but we're not represented in video form. We got to do that. And he was like, I totally agree with you. That's how we can make this band get to a bigger audience and stuff. So it's just, you know, with having videos. So that's what we did. And, so it's great. Yeah. When we're filming, the video, I'm actually filming a video tomorrow for the third track, which is going to be really, really cool. I'll get to walk around Beverly Hills dressed in my full outfit with a giant axe chasing a little blonde girl down the street. It's going to be amazing.
That sounds awesome, man. Plus, you know, you being such a visual performer, you know, growing up, you know, loving Alice Cooper and Kiss and things like that, you know, the videos are probably, you know, just great for you.
Yeah, it's cool. I'm starting to get into them. They're kind of scary for me. I know it sounds kind of strange, but it's weird. Like, when I'm on stage, when the band's playing, I have my confidence and everything's great. But when we do video shoots and you're separated from the band, and I guess, okay, roll. And you get like 20 people standing around and it's like, go, you got to sing by yourself and you get a lip sync, you know, that gets a little like, ugh, for me. I'm like, I'm not super comfy with that. But we've already did like two videos now, or two and a half videos. I've been filming some stuff for this new video, like different days, but I'm getting a lot better doing stuff in front of the camera and not overthinking it. That's my problem. I overthink everything. So I'm starting to actually get into videos and having fun. So, we're shooting a video in a couple weeks for the title track Condolences, which is going to be the weirdest video because I'm actually I'm creating my funeral and I'm having all my friends come to my funeral. And, so it's gonna be kind of weird. And I thought about it and it's starting to creep me out a little bit. I'm like, man, I'm actually going to like be in a casket. My friends are going to be there all dressed up like they're at my funeral. Like, this is kind of creepy. Then I kind of thought about it. I was like, well, you know, it's kind of cool too. Cause most people, when they die, they have these great funerals and they have no idea. I get to see my funeral, kind of what it would be like. So I kind of get, you know, to see it a little bit. So it's kind of, as creepy as it is, it's kind of cool.
Yeah. I couldn't even imagine having my own funeral, being able to plan it. I think I've always had a few, song ideas. I'm like, you need to play this song at my funeral and this song at my funeral. One being like Pantera, Cemetery Gates, As Everyone Leaves.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've always thought As Everyone Leaves, the funeral be playing Orion by Metallica, you know, just because that's just one of the saddest little bass lines and guitars at the end there. But
that's great though.
Oh yeah.
So cool though. Yeah. This title track Condolences is definitely your new funeral song.
Well, there we go. Well, thank you, Wednesday 13. Actually I was going to say, man, I'm big on words and I'm big on, just titles kind of jumping out at me. And when I saw that this album was called Condolences, I was like, man, that is a perfect album title.
Yeah. It really, when I wrote it down, it just stuck and it was instant. It wasn't like I had any other ideas for a title. That was the first thing that came up because it was the first song I started working on. It was right around when Bowie passed. It just seemed like it wasn't just Bowie. That was kind of like the kicker one though, but it was like, it just seemed like everybody was dropping like flies. You know, it seemed like celebrities, musicians, we had some friends, close friends. And I just kept hearing condolences, sorry for your loss, condolences, sorry for your loss. And I had my guitar and I really just did that. And that's the chorus of that song. That's the word of the chorus. And it just became the title track. It became the name of the record. It just, and it just set the whole tone for it. And it's such a cool title too, because opposed to all my other album titles, which I love all my titles, they're all different and things, but they've always kind of had that funny kind of campy thing. Maybe the Skeletons one didn't, but it doesn't give it away right away where you hear a record like Calling All Corpses or Fang Bang and go, oh, this is going to be a fun one and kind of maybe get it figured out. Whereas this, you're like, whoa, this record's this first album cover. I'm not like on the front of it either. So it's got like a sort of a mystery behind it. And it's cool. The artwork, everything just paints a picture of in my head of what this record sounds like. So I really am just, I'm blown away at just how it all pieced itself together.
So let's jump around to a couple other things real quick and then we'll get back to the new record. But the one thing I think is funny with you is anytime that you say the word Murder Dolls, it's like Blabbermouth headline. Do you find that crazy?
It is. It is crazy. It does it on Blabbermouth and then it jumps in the magazines overseas and then they'll pick it up in another country and then I'll start reading it in Portuguese and I can't read what it says. No, man, it's crazy, but it's also cool to know that band's liked and still loved after all the years, and it wasn't just a side project like everyone thought it was going to be in the beginning. Like, it's got a lot of fans, and it's over the years, man. I travel, I tour 9 months out of the year, and I'm lucky I get to go around the world and see people, and I see the Murder Doll fans. Like, I see tattoos, I see the shirts. It's still alive. So when any time that comes up, and especially now that Joey's no longer in Slipknot, everyone's, you know, like, well, why can't you guys do it? And that's the same thing. Like, I don't know why we can't do it, you know? So I'm hoping, in the future, once, Joey and I get some spare time off from doing our new projects with this record and what he's got going on as well. I know he's busy. If, you know, in a couple of years, if we can sit down and maybe do a Murder Dolls tour, you know, it'd be cool to do that. And then if it does well, we won't do a record. We can talk from that point. So it's just, there's no point in my mind why we can't do something on the side. And it would be like a side thing because I'm focused on doing Wednesday 13. I wouldn't want to put that on the side for Murder Dolls. I would just Murder Dolls could just be like a thing, you know, just like when I saw the Misfits do that reunion thing, I was like, wow, this is so cool. They should have done this a long time ago, you know. And, you know, it doesn't mean Danzig can't still do Danzig. It's just like that's his priority, and he's making it his priority, and he does the Misfits probably whenever he feels like it. So it's like that's how I would like Murder Dolls to be, not comparing us to the Misfits, but just in that kind of – in that type of – touring type schedule, you know what I mean? Like it'd be cool to do that.
How cool is it for you to see him kind of back out doing stuff? And you know, because you know, between his time from Slipknot to what he's doing now, he kind of fell off the planet, and now he's back, you know, doing not only one band but two bands, and then even spotted in the studio with Dave Mustaine, which I would love to hear what that is. But so there's no telling.
Yeah,
what's going on.
I mean, Joey's always kind of been a recluse, you know. So when he stayed out of the light there for a while with the Slipknot stuff, which, you know, I understand that as well. It's just so yeah, it's great to see him back out playing music and kicking ass on drums. He's still one of the fucking best drummers in the world, and you know, and I had a great time playing with him. I mean, he's, you know, if he and I, when we get together and write music, it's so much fun. It really is. Like, we have a really, really good time doing that. And so yeah, I wish him the best, and like I said, I hope that we can work out doing Murder Doll sometime in the future. It'd be fun to do that.
By the power of Grayskull.
You are listening to Talk to Me.
So I heard you on a podcast a while back, and the host didn't know what you were talking about when you started talking about He-Man, Masters of the Universe, G.I. Joe, stuff like that. And I wanted to jump through my phone and be like, I know what you're talking about. Since you've put that out there in the world, I've kind of wondered about this, but I mean, since you've put that out there in the world, I mean, are you getting He-Man figures and G.I. Joes still at your shows?
Oh, man. Yeah. It's awesome. It's funny you bring this up because I'm a complete toy nerd. I'm talking to you right now from my apartment here in LA, and I'm in my little, what I call my man cave, my dojo, and I'm just surrounded by nothing but toys. It's all toys. Like I have an entire He-Man shelf. I'm staring at Castle Grayskull and Snake Mountain as we speak right now. I get a lot of fans that bring me some cool stuff. There's one fan from Canada who brings me some of the coolest stuff. She's been searching out, trying to find me all these Flash Gordon toys. So she's been bringing those to me piece by piece, because ever since that movie Ted came out, those Flash Gordon toys, you can't find them anymore. They're like crazy expensive. And all these toy guys bought them and had the Flash Gordon guy sign them, and now they're like $1 million on eBay. But either way, I get all kind of stuff. A friend of mine just brought me, I was just going through them just the other day, looking at what all I had, probably 115, 120 loose G.I. Joe figures.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, it's great. They're all like, they're all off the car, but they're all in that little sandwich bag. So they all got their weapons. Some have their file cards. It's pretty cool. So yeah, I am a complete nerd. I'm actually running out of room. Like, I don't know how I'm going to display the G.I. Joes right now. I have to order online the little pegs for their legs so they can stand up, because if you display them, they're like a domino effect if one of them moves. And I live in Los Angeles, where there's like earthquake tremors like throughout the day sometimes. You can't really tell it, but it'll shake enough, and then I have a G.I. Joe domino effect, and that just drives me crazy.
Yeah, I'll tell you a quick story, and I'll try to give you the abridged version of it. But I had posted on back when Facebook was kind of doing the yard sale Facebook groups or whatever, before they went into this marketplace thing, I posted, you know, looking to buy Masters of the Universe toys. And an old lady wrote me back, and she said, I think we have some of those in the attic, like the perfect start to a great toy find. And
yeah.
So I set up a time to go over, and I met the husband, the grandfather or the father or whatever. And we go out to this really nice attic, you know, above the garage, and there's five like gigantic boxes, and one of them says He-Man, one of them says G.I. Joe, one of them says like miscellaneous.
Oh,
and the guy looks at me,
man, he must have just got like just super happy, just like palms started sweating. You're like, oh my god, what's in the box?
And I didn't bring I didn't bring a lot of cash with me. I brought $100 with me because I just didn't know what I was getting myself into. And I start opening the boxes, and I'm like, all right, there's He-Man, there's blah, 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 there's this, there's, you know, Snake Mountain, Castle Grayskull. And then I'm starting to look, and I start seeing things I've never seen before. And I start like piecing it together in my head. I'm like, this is Eternia. So in all the boxes, they had basically almost like a 90% complete Eternia, every He-Man figure possible. Wow. And then I opened up another box and I'm rummaging around. And then there's a big giant Ziploc bag. It's weapons, it's, you know, guards and shields and everything else. And I look at the person and I was like, I don't even know if I have enough money to buy this. And the guy was like, you give me $50 and you have to take all of it. And I was like, I couldn't get the money out of my pocket fast enough. So, yeah.
You're kidding me.
So it was one of the most insane days of my life.
That's defined right there, man.
The mom,
somebody that doesn't know what they have.
Yeah, well, basically, I guess the dad said that they had told their kids, like, come get this crap out of our garage, and they never would. And then the mom said that, like, she was adamant about her kids keeping the weapons and keeping everything together. Because my son, who's 11, he'll get something out of the package, and within 4 seconds, like, the gun's missing. So I don't know how the people...
Right. Yeah, I had a friend's mom that would do that same thing, made him keep everything. And then when I saw him later on, like, all his toys are like in mint condition, not one thing's missing off of them. I was that little kid that I could lose it, or the vacuum would have me search into the vacuum cleaner bag trying to find Han Solo's pistol.
So what's your like holy grail toy that you have right now in your collection?
It's a good question. I'm looking around my room right now. One of my oldest and one of my favorite things I have, I have a Herman Munster pull string doll from the late 60s. It was in the Sears Roebuck catalog.
Nice.
That's one of my oldest, rarest things I have. I collect all kind of stuff. I mean, I'm slowly getting all the G.I. Joe stuff. One of the coolest little toys I got is a little one-off at, I got at a horror convention last year. Actually, my drummer bought it for me, and he said, I had to get this for you. Someone made a little one-off of Chet from Weird Science, Bill Paxton, when he got turned into that pile of shit. someone made a little toy of him, and I have that. That sits right here on my desk. So every day I have a Chet from Weird Science looking at me.
Are there Wednesday 13 action figures out there?
No, but there needs to be, and there will be if I get my way. There's a Wednesday 13 hand puppet that I put out in 2004.
Nice.
To this company out, and I don't know how many of those have actually sold. It was kind of based off my old look. It's cool. It's like I've got the skeleton outfit on, and it's my dreadlocks, and both my hands are doing the devil horns, and I have one to myself, and I occasionally will be playing shows on tour, and I'll just see a hand in the audience with my little puppet on it every once in a while. So they're still out there.
That's great. Yeah, another thing I kind of wanted to say was I was going through Wikipedia, which, you know, doing the crack research that I was doing for this, but man, I'm loving the early 90s band names, you know, the Frankenstein Drama Queens from Planet 13. Yeah. What is it? Yeah. Where was the other one at in here?
Maniac Spider.
Maniac. Yeah, there we go. Queens.
Yeah, all those bands.
I think in the early 90s, you had to have like just 13 words that didn't go together and just smash them all together to make a band name.
Well, For us, we were just, I don't really know what we were rebelling against. We were just rebelling against everybody. Like, we had the weirdest mindset. Like, it was like, for me, nothing was too weird. Like, both of those bands, Maniac Spider Trash, like, it's like, I wish we'd have paid more attention to the music, because everything else was just like, it was literally like watching a toy show come to life. Like, if you saw Maniac Spider Trash in these little bars back in the 90s, we had like a curtain we'd put in front so no one could see us set all of our stuff up. And like, I would crawl out of like garbage cans, like Oscar the Grouch. It was the weirdest stuff. I had like a baby crib on stage I came out of one time. We had a full trampoline on stage one time, live chickens. We were weird, as weird as possible. And, we didn't want to get along. We didn't get along with any of the other bands in town. We just wanted to start a war with them. It was just, it didn't make a whole lot of sense. I don't really know what I was trying to do. Like, we could have probably done some things had we been nice. We were just weird. Just a weird, strange band. But I look back on it and I'm really, really proud of it.
Yeah, I think that was kind of the sign of the times. I mean, I started playing in bands roughly in 95-ish. So, I mean, you know, I grew up going to those shows and going to, you know, local shows and things like that. And you know, there were, you know, a few bands here and there. I always remember this one band. They did, I don't even know if they played a show, but for their set time, they just put a Teddy Rupskin like in the middle of the stage and put a and put a mic on him, and he was like, it was just like this, you know, black metal cassette tape coming out of it. So, you know, stuff like that was such a norm at the time.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember the band.
Yeah, that's I remember Teddy Ruxpin. That's a good idea. I was telling somebody the other day one of the dumbest things Frankenstein Drag Queens did. I still don't know why. We played this little bar one time, and I had the idea. I was like, "Hey, we'll play our intro, and then we'll come out and we'll play this song, and then we'll walk off, and then we'll come back out, or then we'll have the intro start again, and we'll come back out and play the same song again, and then walk off again." And then come back out and play the intro one more time. Like, we were just making people feel like they were on drugs or something. Like, what are they doing? That was one of the weirdest things.
Yeah, but if anybody was at that show, they're still to this day going, man, this one time I saw this band and they played their intro and then they played the song and then they left the stage. Like, they're telling that story too. Like, that's
exactly. So that's what I always thought. It's just always, we would, you know, I worked like at Kmart, I think, back around that time, and or a furniture store, and I would both of those jobs, and I work, you know, 9 to 5 and work during the week, so my weekend shows were my time to strike, and I'm like, man, I hate working Kmart, it's my weekend, I gotta see what I can do this week to be outrageous on stage. Let's see what I can figure out. Okay, here's a live chicken. Okay, see what I can do with this.
I mean, that's roughly about the same time, you know, Manson's doing the stuff down in Florida. Were you aware of him, or was it like parallel thinking? What's going on there?
Not at all. And that's what was so cool, because it was weird, because there was no internet. There was really just like fanzines that people did, like that you would pass back through the mail, like pen pals that did, mm-hmm. like, that's how you would hear of Frankenstein Drag Queens in Los Angeles, is because somebody had like a little photocopied fanzine thing that they would put out once every couple months and talk about the bands they like, and they would interview them. So when I first saw Manson, I just saw him on Headbangers Ball when they debuted that Get Your Gun song. And I was like, holy shit. and I went and bought the cassette, cause I had it in my 1979 Honda. And I got record when I was 18. I was still in high school when I got it, and then when he started, and I went and saw them play live, and it was literally like watching a way, 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 way better version of my band. And I was like, fuck, man, this guy's good, you know. And I was like, so I used to hand out my cassettes at his shows, and it's funny because me and Manson are buddies now, you know, so he remembers me at all those shows and all that. So he knows I've been around for a while. So, it's crazy. But I had no idea what he was doing. We were doing so much similar stuff. And then, of course, when he blew up, then everyone just, they went from calling me Alice Cooper to Marilyn Manson. So, yeah, and I still to this day, I get called, hey, Marilyn Manson. It's like, yep.
Yeah, I know.
So every time I talk to Marilyn, when I talk to Manson, I always go, what's up, Marilyn Manson? I always say it like it's one. Both his names is like one word.
I always love this quote about Marilyn Manson, and you know how accurate it is, I don't know, but I remember his, I don't know how your family is about, you know, your Wednesday 13 moniker, but I guess his mom still calls him Brian, but his dad calls him Marilyn, because he's like, if he wants to be Marilyn Manson, he can be Marilyn Manson. So that's,
yeah, his dad calls him Manson. I've met his dad several times, and his dad's awesome. And it's my parents. No, they still call me Joe, and that's why. But everyone I know now knows me as Wednesday. So if anyone ever calls me Joe, I always look around like, oh, my mom's yelling at me.
Like you're in trouble for not picking up your He-Man swords.
Exactly.
Real quick, I mean, I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee, and you know, you grew up in North Carolina. What kind of, mm-hmm. when did you move out to L.A.?
I moved out, to LA. Well, it's weird. I was doing the math on that too the other day. I was like, how long have I been out here now? I started moving out here. I came out here in 2000, at the end of 2008 for a little while. And then in 2009, I moved back again, and I've been pretty much back here. I've been back here ever since then. So I was married and I got divorced, and I thought the best thing I could do was to go 3,000 miles away. And let that dust settle. And now I really come to love it out here. I used to really not like Los Angeles, and I think I just associated Los Angeles with some people I didn't like here, and I just went, I don't like LA. I'm a country boy, and but over the years, man, I really like it. You really can't beat this weather. Like, it's pretty much consistent. You can have a summer day, and then at night you can be cool and wear a jacket. And so yeah, it's really cool. It's so different, but I love it, man. I being able to travel and tour and living in a different place is so exact opposite of where I grew up. You know, it just gives me like a better perspective on life and things and people, and because it's just really just a different walk of life out here compared to how the little town I grew up in. Not to say it's better or anything, it's just different. And you know, so it's just, I don't know, it's really cool for me just to be able to travel, and I get to go around the world with the band and play all these different countries and see things from different points of view. And I think that's been the best education I could have ever got than anything in school or anything, is just being in a band and going on tour and meeting people and traveling the world has been the best thing ever.
Do you think it's still a thing to move to LA to try to make it? I mean, I know you're not trying to make it. You've already quote unquote made it, but you know, is it still like do you think the kids' dreams out there, you know, living in a North Carolina, a Tennessee, was like, I need to go to LA to make it? Or do you feel like the internet's kind of opened it up to where you can make it from, you know, Des Moines, Iowa?
Yeah, I don't know. I still think there's still the kids that's got that old school rock and roll dream of coming out to a big city and making a name for themselves. And I don't know if there's bands that still do it. I certainly didn't move here because I was like, oh, I'm going to make it in LA. It just worked out for me. I had a place to stay during when I was going through my separation and everything with my ex-wife. And, it just worked out for me, and I got to stay here, and, it's just, now it's awesome. Now I use it to my advantage because I get to do so much stuff. Like, the record company's 10 minutes from here, so I can go there and do stuff. Like, every band that ever tours plays on my street.
Nice.
Usually, so I can see pretty much every band, and usually it's cool stuff that you wouldn't see anywhere else, like little one-off shows for people, because they usually come to LA to play, and I usually get to go, even though I'm pretty much been a recluse lately. To get me to go out ever is almost impossible. I went out last week for the first time and saw Faster Pussycat play.
Nice.
That's the first live show I've seen in I don't know how long since my last live show.
So would you suggest maybe to people out there listening that, you know, if you're looking for opportunities, I mean, do you feel like you're maybe getting more opportunities being out there? Like, it's since, you know, you're running into people and going to shows, things like that.
Well, it's like this, you know, you can have that mentality of thinking I'll go to a big city and I'll do that. But the internet now is, you don't have to do that. Like, you can make a bigger sound for yourself being in a small town doing something big, you know. Like, look at Slipknot. I mean, look at their story. It's incredible. It's like, you know, nine dudes in mask in a cornfield. It's insane, you know, and right. No one had ever seen anything like that before. And that's why they were successful, and they had good music to back it up. And so you can think of that. You can think of it from that kind of point of view too, which is, I think, is probably the smartest way is to make a name for yourself in your town. And that's kind of what Frankenstein Drag Queens did, my old band. Like, we had a little year there where we get to play on this big festival thing, and we made a big name for ourselves. And we were like packing these like big clubs, that like Nashville Acts toured at. And, so we made a name for ourselves because we were this outrageous band in this little tiny town. So I think that works the best instead of going, oh, I'm going to move to a big town, because that's why we're not doing something asleep. No. The internet now opens up that door. You can be famous anywhere now.
Yeah, the band Ghost Bath, that's kind of got a nice little buzz about them right now. The dude's from North Dakota. I was just like, what? North Dakota?
Wow.
But
Yeah.
That's a great story there. But let's go get back around to the album, and then I'll let you go, because I know you've been gracious with your time today. But so
that's
the
good, man.
Pre-orders out now on Nuclear Blast. The album comes out June 2nd. So, you know, just
yes.
Basically, I saw, like, I guess there's some vinyl, some limited edition vinyl pre-order stuff like that too. What all is going on with the pre-order?
Yeah, man. There's four different the pre-sale right now. And there's so much going on. I don't even know if I can explain it right, but it's on nuclearblast.com. You get the info link off the official Wednesday13.com. But yeah, right now there's four vinyl versions, four double vinyl versions, four different colors. There's like a blood splatter color. There's a tombstone gray color. There's one they're calling like bone white. And then there's one they're calling like bone black. And, so yeah, it's really cool, man, just to see. And it's double vinyl, and the artwork and everything, like just seeing that album cover that big, because I already have a copy of the record that are already done. But just seeing it that big, it looks amazing. So collector-wise, they got a lot to collect this time.
Very cool. Speaking of collecting, man, if people are listening and they want to bring you a toy or something, what's some of the stuff you're looking for right now?
You know, one of the things I do collect, and they keep making more and more of them, and I've got most of them by fans bringing them to me, and they're on different companies, but these little, they're called reaction figures, and basically this company, I don't know if you know familiar with this, but they...
Yeah, I've got some. I've got the some of the Back to the Future ones.
Oh, I have, like, I've lost count. I have, like, 50 or 60 of them right now. Nice. They're all on my wall right now, and, but yeah, I collect all those. I'm still missing a bunch of them. There's a whole, like, I'm still missing some of the aliens. I think I have a mix. So those are some of the figures I try to collect, but mainly I'm looking for old retro G.I. Joe bad guys, like all the Cobra guys is who I want. I'll take the good guys, but I mainly want the bad guys, and I'm slowly getting them. Like I have half the Dreadnoughts. I don't have Zartan yet, which really bothers me. I need that. I will have it this year. So yeah, just any kind of old school 80s toys, horror movie, Alien, Flash Gordon, Beetlejuice, Swamp Thing, anything, Indiana Jones, anything. Rocky, Rambo. I collect everything. I am a complete nerd about all this stuff. So yeah, that's any of that stuff is. And sometimes fans bring me stuff and bring it to me before the show, and I put them on the guest list and give them a T-shirt or a merch if they bring something. And there's one fan that comes out and trades toys with me, and I think I traded the guitar one time and got like five boxes of Indiana Jones toys.
Wow.
So so I mean, I'm obsessed with toys. I don't know why, or I'm running out of room.
I think, you know, honestly, if we had the Skype going right now, you would see my, you know, my walls around me too are about the same thing, you know, Back to the Future posters and Beetlejuice posters and toys. And it's pretty ridiculous, yeah, man. So yeah, when I heard you on the other podcast talking about that, I was like, man, I have to talk to Wednesday 13.
Yeah, man, I'm just a toy nerd. And I love it because it's just, for me, I don't know how it is like for you. It's like, but like when I, growing up watching that stuff when it was brand new, like I'm not like, you know, rediscovering it. Like I got to see, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street when it was a new movie, and Back to the Future when it was a new movie, and you know what I mean, like it's, yeah, just so cool to grow up during that time. You really just can't explain it. People weren't glued to their smartphones, to their brains, and people actually had to have an imagination and go out and do stuff. Kids went outside and played instead of playing on their phone, and I sound like an old man now, but it was just a cool time, and it was different. And that's why when I saw that show Stranger Things, man, they really captured that vibe. Just being like, I mean, I felt like I was a little kid. Like I was that little kid on the bike, getting home late, and my parents going, "You're gonna miss dinner. Get in here." And you're on your friends were out because you found like a dead snake in the woods, and you wanted to look at it all night. You didn't want anybody to know it. Like just weird stuff like that. Being growing up, so why I love that show so much.
Did you watch Rad as a kid?
The bike movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Rad, BMX Bandits was another one I think was on around that time. But yeah, man, it was really cool. My family, we had a legal HBO and Cinemax hookup.
Nice.
And for like 3 years. We had everything. And I grew up until I was like 13, I lived in a little single wide trailer with my mom, my dad, my brother, and my sister, and I didn't have a bedroom until I was like 11. I just slept on the couch. So my parents would go to bed, I'd turn the TV on, and I'd sit up and watch Creepshow and Swamp Thing and all these movies at like 6, 7 years old. And so that's what made me who I am, like that TV and movies and things like that. And I love getting off summer vacation for school and just coming home and just my parents would go to work and get up in the morning and watch. I mean, it was like one summer where they kept showing that movie Strange Brew like every nice. Other day was my favorite. Strange Brew and Octopussy with James Bond was on like every other day, and I was obsessed with both of those movies.
Yeah, as a
kid, it was just a cool time, and I Yeah, I loved it back then.
Yeah, my dad had one of those gigantic satellite dishes that had like the crank on it. I just remember being a kid.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And I'd have to stand in the doorway of the house and watch the TV, and he would go, I guess you could get a remote sensor like at some point, but he would actually have to physically go out there and crank this thing, and he had like little notches on the crank to like, I guess, know which satellite he was bouncing off of. Yeah, that's a good time.
We had a giant antenna hooked onto our trailer that basically had this so old ghetto style, this giant rotor that sat on top of the giant TV. The TVs back then were those giant wood boxes, mm-hmm. like, and you had this rotor, and basically if you wanted to get, before we had cable, and if you wanted to have like a clear channel, you basically had to turn that rotor and that antenna would move. And once you found where it picked the station up better, then you'd stop it.
Yeah. And then you almost had to stand still too. Like you couldn't move either to keep the,
putting tinfoil on the rabbit ear. Going, oh, you know, I remember the Elvira had a show that she used to host on channel 48, and 48 would not come in, but barely. And I can't tell you how many Saturday nights I sit there with foil, just holding the antennas, trying to get a picture out of her hosting Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
Talking about Elvira, about a woman that is beautiful in both incarnations as her normal redheaded self and Elvira. Man, she's still smoking hot.
Yeah, she's awesome. I met her a couple years ago at a convention I did and got a photo with her. And she's super cool, and she's awesome. So I've actually did a bunch of conventions with her. Sometimes I'll have like my table and I'm like literally like three tables down, so I get to stare at her all weekend. It's pretty cool.
People getting your autographs and stuff you're not even paying attention. You're like, do you realize that's Elvira?
Nope. No, I mean, I've had that happen a couple times. I've got, they set me beside a Linda Blair one year, and it freaked me out. And I watched her because she got mad at a few people who were like taking pictures without her saying first. So she got all rude with them, and I was like, whoa. Like Linda Blair, the Exorcist is gonna kill somebody, and I got a giant Exorcist tattoo on my arm. I was kind of afraid to go up to her and go, "Hey, look!" But she was super nice to me, and she smiled. But I was just intimidated by her because it's Linda Blair. But yeah, I've been to a lot of these conventions and met a lot of these cool people. It's just it's crazy, man. My 80s memorabilia toy movie thing is really kind of come full throttle in the past few years because I've been doing all these horror conventions and like just the people I've become friends with and met. Like I mean, I almost know the entire Texas Chainsaw Massacre family now. It's crazy.
We'll go last question on this and I'll let you go. But are you an eBay guy? Are you like, you know, I want to find this, or are you more of a, I want to find it in the wild, like find it at a used bookstore or something, or a garage sale or something?
Every once in a while I'll go on eBay and look up something. Like the other day I looked up, because I did an interview with Nuclear Blast and I talked about the Stretch Armstrong monster. And I've never seen it in a store, so I went on eBay just to see if they're around and if how much they go for. And sometimes I'll look on eBay, but usually I won't pay that kind of crazy, unless I'm just in some crazy manic mood where I have to spend money, which luckily I don't do that a lot. I like to go to stores sometimes when we're on tour and have a day off, and we find like some little mom and pop cool little store that has all cool old stuff and kind of stuff like that, almost kind of like Gremlin style when they found Gizmo. You're like, whoa, look what I found in here. You know, you have to go search it out.
That's awesome, man. Well, Wednesday 13, thank you so much, man, for taking the time today. And everyone out there, make sure you're checking out Condolences June 2nd on Nuclear Blast, man. Appreciate the time.
Thank you, man.
Yo, what's up? This is Etzel from the band Dope, and you are listening to Talk to Me. To Me's his name. It's not Talk to Me. It's Talk to Me. To me, but you can talk to me.
And once again, thank you to Wednesday 13 for coming on the podcast. What a cool guy. And I knew once I heard him on the other podcast talking about toys, I knew I had to have him on, because for a very long time I was buying and selling a lot of 80s toys. I still have a lot around me, as you cannot see, but it's a lot of fun. And what a great guy. Hopefully I'll get him back on the podcast soon and we can nerd out and talk some more He-Man and all kinds of other great stuff. So, final thoughts. And let's do my final thoughts.
So Local H wins a Metallica local band contest. And I've had so much fun on the internet trying to argue with people about how there's no way that Local H should have ever been in this contest, let alone win it. And it's funny, the common denominator with everyone that argues with me is the fact that they're Local H fans. So you cannot have a Local H argument with a Local H fan because they're obviously very biased. But, you know, what I was hoping that would come from this contest would be someone's maybe a big shot to open up for Metallica. Not only open up for Metallica, but, you know, if they win the contest, everybody's going to go check them out. And you know what? Maybe nothing happens from it. Maybe something does happen from it. But at least it's an opportunity for someone to get in front of some eyes and some ears, and not a band that has two greatest hits albums, a gold record from a single that came out in 1998 that was on Spin's top 20 albums of the year in 1998. 19 years ago, people. This is absolutely ridiculous. I hope that, you know, for these five shows that they get to open, I hope everything goes well for them and they get all the wonderful glamour that it is for opening for Metallica. You know, they may be a hardworking band, but that's not the point of this contest. I don't know why arguing with people online, which, you know, you should never do it to begin with. And that's why I love having a podcast and a platform to just yell into this microphone my opinion on this. And my opinion is, Local H should have never been in this contest to begin with. I don't care if they're an unsigned band at this point. At one point, they were a major label band. So if the reason you're an unsigned band is the fact that you got dropped by your major label, you should not be in an unsigned band contest. It's absolutely ridiculous. I have nothing against Local H. Take Local H out of this equation. It would be any band that's had a record deal and had a hit single. Like, I hear that single on the radio occasionally. It's not like it's gone away. It would be like Dishwalla opening for Megadeth. Better than Ezra opening for Slayer. I wish Metallica would step up and be like, hey, you know, there's something fishy about all this. And there's no way that Metallica, you know, there's no way that this is some sort of payola scheme or it's some sort of backdoor thing to get Local H to open for them. I mean, if Metallica wanted a Local H to open for them, they would just get Local H to open for them. So I don't see how it's a rigged contest or whatever. The only thing I see that's crazy about the whole thing is Local H only beat out this band Mothership by like 1% of the vote. And from what I can tell online is people from all over the country were voting for Local H. So this band Mothership is well deserved to win this because you have people that are coming out of the woodwork that are fans of Local H, that have been fans of Local H for 20 years. They see their favorite band on this contest. They're like, oh shit, we got to vote for Local H. It's absolutely ridiculous. Aaron Camaro, Sean Reinert, you guys enjoy not going to see Metallica and seeing this opening band. You know, it's crazy to me. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And if you take your fandom out of the equation and just see it as for what it is, it's absolutely nuts. So those are my final thoughts for the week. You guys check me out, talktomepod.com. Thank you guys for listening each and every week to the podcast and spread the word. Make sure you're sharing the podcast to all your friends and family. So for the Talk To Me podcast, I am Joshua Toomey. I will see you guys next week on episode 100. You guys have a great week and I'll talk to you soon.
Do not attempt to approach. Talk to me, motherfucker. You gon' listen up close. Raised by the devil, marked by the gods to be the king of this podcast shit when it drops. Fucking around with Josh, get your face all split up. Get stuck in the zone when you lit up. You better shut your bitch up and pick up when you pause that. Dopest weekly podcast, rock stars, the ball rap, and everything in between. You tune into the grooviest, fattest shit on the planet. Uncle Talk from this jack of all trades. We demand it every single week to hear this motherfucker speak candid. Hey, breed the twisted. If you missed it, bitch, you slipping. I think that mighty vanish. He probably jumped the shark. His story's about to blow and leave a legendary mark. So welcome to the carnival. The shit's about to spark. If you ain't with it, then it's wicked. Gonna rip your ass apart. Talk to